Listen up, all day family. It's Brett and Lofa talking Seahawks football, looking towards the matchup with the Miami Dolphins, but coming off that huge, huge win with the New England Patriots, who I think are better than a lot of people gave them credit for to start this season. Lofa, how you feeling coming off the Patriots win, but going into this Dolphins game?
Oh, just on top of the world, brother. Undefeated? Is that good?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. Not according to ESPN, but we'll get to that. Yeah.
How dare they? But you know, I got up early today, played some basketball, won every game, just like our Seahawks. So it's just a trend around these parts.
Life is good in Seattle right now as a Seahawk fan. However, there's a backup quarterback coming to town, so a dark cloud could be on the horizon. I'm not sure.
Giving us trouble in the past.
Yeah, at least that dark cloud's name is not Colt McCoy.
Man. Yeah, every time we played him, you called it, partner. And so hopefully it doesn't, you know, lightning doesn't strike twice.
Dude gives me nightmares. But our pass rush is, I think, number one in the NFL in pressures and up there in sacks. I mean, coming off week two, getting after Jacoby Brissett. So I'm just like, honestly, I'm pumped to just see how this defense is going to line up against the Dolphins and what could be a high-powered offense if the quarterback can give them the ball. But just based on what we did in 2 weeks, I'm just looking forward to this one.
Oh, dude, I can't wait. And, you know, how we've always talked, the game within the game, not just the individual matchup player-wise, but a McDaniel-led offense versus a McDonald-led defense. It's high-powered and then high-pressure, so something's got to give.
Big back matchup.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Put it in the headlines. Dolphins. You ever played the Dolphins?
Yeah, 2008, I believe.
Mm-hmm. How'd that go?
Not awesome, Brett.
Oh, really? I don't remember. I'm not asking a leading question. I don't actually remember.
I wish I didn't remember, but if you want my memories. So we were not very good that year. And, you know, the Dolphins, they were actually surging. That was the year where they brought the Wildcat. Was it Tony Sperano? He used Ricky Williams and Ronnie Brown and just gave people fits. And so the two memories I have was Ricky Williams came off a three-year hiatus of, you know, finding himself. Kudos to Ricky. He's a plant advocate just like myself. But the guy came back 25 pounds lighter, faster and stronger, it seemed. And
how do you get back 25 pounds lighter when you're smoking all that cheap?
Dude, he's yoga. He was living the yogi life
there, but
right, you know, probably intermittent fasting. He was really just dialing it in, and and so we thought, all right, the guy lost 25 pounds. No way he still has it. And the 25 pounds, he gained speed, even more speed, which is wow. Scary thought. But I think he had 100 plus yards on like 10 carries, and we were just grateful they didn't hand it off to him more. But the best story of this is one of the players from the Dolphins got cut, right? And I don't know if we picked him up or, you know, just stories get out there that they got some trick plays coming. And so one of our boys got the information, inside intel. Uh-huh. The two plays they scored on were from – they were the exact two plays that they told were coming. And I was like, there's no fucking way that just happened.
Why were you able to stop it?
Well, it's not like they tell you when they're going to run right. them. It's okay. Just like they always have wrinkles in. And it wasn't exactly like we were told, but like I sat there and I was like, damn, like the two plays that they said were in the playbook.
Should have seen it coming.
Got us.
Hey, on this episode, are the Seahawks contenders or pretenders? What can be done about the so far offensive line? Also, Sam Marcoux from the Perfectville podcast on the Believe Sports Network will be joining us. And then also a Seahawks player to be named later. Fill in the blank here Maybe we can edit that in later. We haven't found out yet. But also our look around the league, and we'll get into everything that's been going on in the NFL. Tons of juicy storylines this early in the season already. But Lofa, what do the Seahawks need to do specifically to remain undefeated?
Good question. Are we going either side of the ball here or just overall in terms of...
What are Lofa's 5.1 keys to the game?
Oh, 5.1. I think just, you know, you're returning home after a long trip. You know, we got to check into the injury report and see, because we really need Kenneth Walker back. And this, you know, I love Sharps and I think he'll find his rhythm and everything. I think what I'm also looking for is maybe some more or unique things to happen in terms of play calling, different styles of runs for Sharps specifically. I don't love sitting out of the shotgun, and you know, we didn't do it all the time, but it was enough where you don't get the momentum with a big, strong running back like Sharp. So that's what I'd like to see change for him. And then, you know, K9, he adds a different element, you know, that has to scare other defenses. But even chipping with the tight ends, right, to help the offensive line that you said. That I think, you know, that's something we've seen in the past that really – It's worked and gotten us a lot of, you know, short checkdowns that have gone to like, you know, 12, 15 yards, probably on average. It was really, think about the Lions game like a year ago where they did that. It was just very, very cool to see that kind of strategy. That's what I always look for, the strategy, brother.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. What would be your game plan going into this one? Because, you know, we had K9 in game one, so they lean on him heavy. If you don't have him in game two or three, you lean on Geno, which last week, that's just fine by me.
Yeah.
So is it the same sort of game plan this week?
No, I think, you know, if we don't have Kenneth Walker, we'll have to mix in Mac, who was the preseason MVP.
Yes. Right?
Your boy, the one you've been saying, let's go. And I'm on board with it because he's a receiving threat. His speed is just very, very dynamic. And so, and then, you know, Sharps, he had a lot of 14 carries and he had five or so checkdowns or completions as a touch. So he had a lot of work, you know, and I think just spelling him and giving them a change of pace is a big thing. And
well,
then,
maybe it's pass pro though too, right? Like maybe Mac isn't as sturdy on pass protection because Sharps, you know, and in the meantime, between our last live and now, I've been seeing clips on Twitter, on the internet, whatever, stepping up and providing some time for Geno there. And so I don't think we gave him enough credit, honestly, on the live for what he did in pass protection helping out.
No, you're right. Dude's a beast. I would have made a hell of a linebacker out of Sharps. I'll tell you that right now. Wish I looked like Sharps. But so, stepping up, and maybe that's why we haven't seen as much, because the game, like you said, did go very pass heavy because we needed it. Not a lot to be had on the ground. So great observation, my friend.
Ah, thanks, buddy. So the offensive line, the offensive line, I mean, chipping with the tight ends, all that kind of stuff. All I know is, man, we got to move some people and just start pushing people around. Yeah.
Absolutely. So it could even just be like gap trap, which when I say that, you know, what the Patriots did to us was use pullers. And when the pullers happen, you know, especially if they are a really aggressive defense like we are, now, like, you have to adjust your course and get over the top of those. Otherwise, you get creased. And, you know, it's just tough duties. I saw Dodson take on a blocker. He smashed him. But right there, I would have liked to seen him use his quicks. And, like, that's what, you know, you need to do in when you're in a one-on-one like that.
O-line. Dude, I mean, you went against arguably one of the best offensive lines of all time.
Yeah. I mean,
what was it like to go against those guys every day?
Hell. quite honestly, brother, two Hall of Famers, a Pro Bowler and Robbie Toback. And then I've said it with Chris Gray and Sean Locklear, they should have made Pro Bowls as well. And so it was very disheartening. I thought I made a big mistake. Leaving college early. And I was like, man, you know what? Maybe I'm not ready for this. I mean, because I'm about this life, but holy shit, I've got like two tackles and three practices, and I'm used to a couple more than that.
Yeah, no kidding. Back to K-9 for a second. Also, he's on the injury report, of course, did not practice. He's got the oblique. Have you had an oblique, and what is that injury, and what's that like?
Dude, it's terrible. I had it against Philly. You know, it was turned out to be best game of my life, but it wasn't because it was a torn oblique. It just worked out that way. It's very painful. It's different for everybody, you know, because it's really one of those pain tolerance things. And like, I could see where it would be very tough for a running back. All the twisting and motions, it's not awesome. But for a linebacker, I, you know, hat in hands, even all the physical stuff didn't hurt, but it was turning, like cutting on a dime and going the other direction. But you know what? God gave me two, so I just used the other one.
Oh, man. Well, we got to stick to the air then and go with Geno and look at the receivers. But if I'm mentioning the air, then I should mention that you guys need to go with the flow, that go with the throw, excuse me.
Either one. I like both.
Yeah. Go with the throw. You can earn 1 mile for every Seahawks passing yard this season with Delta 12 status. Sign up and start earning miles at 12status.com. That's 12, then the word status.com. Open to legal residents of Washington. Must be 18 years or older. How about DK going against Jalen Ramsey? An old familiar matchup in the air there this Sunday.
Yeah. I think this tilt favors DK, just being younger and just an absolute specimen. And you know he looks forward to these matchups. He went against the highest paid corner in Surtain week one, another good, worthy adversary with Gonzalez. And so he's looking forward to this one. I know that for sure, especially with their history, right?
Yeah. Well, dude, I'm looking for DK to have that Megatron game, man. You know, and who better to do it against than a guy like Ramsey? The battles in the past when he was on the Rams were just, you know, legendary. There was the game-winning catch two seasons ago, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this one's like a WWE or like a heavyweight, you know, matchup. So this one's going to be fun. I think, you know, that's where my eyes will be on most plays.
Clash of the Titans. It was like when I was coaching, I got to watch Richard Sherman and Brandon Marshall like just duke it out. And it was tough for me to not just keep watching that matchup. Of course, I was in the booth way up there, so I was watching through binoculars. But they were going back and forth. And I think Brandon had 100+ and a touchdown, and Sherm had two interceptions, almost had a third. It was I don't know who won that battle. It was we won the game. So, but it was just epic.
Who's on the other side for them? Like, who's going against JSN and Lockett and the other guys?
Oh, man, the rest of them. Because it's going to be, I'm telling you, it's going to be a one-on-one. And then, hey, kind of like Deion Sanders, hey, you got that guy, and we got the rest, is how they did it. But, I really don't know. And we got into this the last two shows. It's like, I don't know how you plan for this offense. If K-9's, you know, going to, or the run game's going, okay, you double DK. Now you got two guys in JSN and Locke that can kill zone coverage. And then also, you know, they can still, you know, burn man. So it's good luck.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Breaking news, Katie, who do we get?
Kobe Bryant
will be sitting down. So get your questions ready for Kobe coming up later on the show. How about the guy who's throwing DK and the receivers the ball, though? Geno, we love him around here, but for some reason, he's still underrated around the league, and people don't give him his respect, flowers, compliments.
Yeah.
Why? When will they start? They asked DK about this. DK almost got offended at the podium. Just saying, like, did you say underrated? Yeah. Underrated, by the way, is not as bad as everybody thinks it is. It means that you're really good. It's just that people aren't talking about you.
It's a respect factor, right?
Okay, like, sure. Oh, for sure.
You
know, yeah.
And I'm just saying, as a former player, it's like, yo, he's done enough to earn the respect. You look at the numbers, they flashed up there that he's had the most game-winning drives over the last 2 years, right? And he just does it again. So I think really the problem here is when you come into the league, depending on where you're drafted, which he was drafted fairly early, like there's a lot of expectations placed upon you. And things did not go how they were supposed to go in terms of everybody's opinion, right? Because they saw all the yards at West Virginia, all the touchdowns, everything. You know, he was that next guy. And so when it didn't happen, and then 8-9 years later, he finally gets his chance, and it's just that stigma carries with you. It's almost like the opposite for a first rounder, right? They get every chance in the world, no matter how many teams, like, it, you know, teams just keep offering them, like, nah, I can bring that dog out of them that was there. Well, Geno got that dog, and I'm telling you, the kid's been through hell, and yeah. I can't wait for him to, you know, fully embrace this moment and keep taking, you know, build on the momentum.
It's just weird. And as a Seahawks fan, it feels disrespectful to us too, though, the way that the national media or whatever you want to call it treats him. Because, you know, a guy like Sam Darnold, no offense to your Trojan here, but like, he, what has he really done? Comes out, wins two games. Everybody's just slobbering all over him. Or like a guy like Derek Carr, he's been around forever. What's he ever really done? Oh, he comes out, wins two games. Everyone's like, Derek Carr could be the MVP. Where is the love for Geno, who's been doing it for 3 years?
Amen, brother. You know, shout out to those two guys, because one's a Trojan, and then the other one just seems like a great dude. Yeah, he's okay. A nice guy.
Let's start seeing Geno getting those headlines. How about our pass rush? Pass rush, pass rush, pass rush. My kingdom for a pass rush. It's here. It's finally here. We lead the league in pressures. We're getting to the quarterbacks. I think we even have a graphic. I love it. And Boye Mafe, is leading the charge, and he's awesome. And I can't even imagine what it'll be when Chenna comes back.
Was that Boye's Mafia? Is that where you're going with that? Should we start the shirts for that one?
Yes.
That's a bad dude. And just, he, Boye is a guy that could have 12 plus sacks a year. I go back and look at, you know, some of the missed opportunities where he's first on the scene and, you know, flushes the quarterback out the other way and someone else capitalizes on it. But even just against Denver, when Nick's rolled out, you know, he left his feet. These are just little tiny things that he can fix. And like, now, you know, he leaves the game with 2+ sacks. It's but the pressure's always there. I thought Derek Hall looked great. Leonard got to be the MVP so far, only 2 games, but so disruptive. Jay Reed still strong in the trenches. Murph pushing the pocket.
Yep.
When Chana gets back, it's going to be real scary.
I saw something where Tua was getting rid of the ball in like 2.6 seconds or, you know, something like that. And Skylar Thompson gets rid of it in 3.08. So hopefully he does hold on to it that extra little bit and they could get there.
It's a huge difference for those guys up front, man.
Yeah. The defense is playing great. I mean, everyone's praising the defense, but from your eye and the way that you see it, are there any improvements they could make, and what are those areas?
Just a little more consistency in terms of, you know, think and run first, like, because we have the secondary to match up with anyone. We're going to get tested this week with their receivers, right? But just a little more urgency to the run. And like I said, I wasn't, you know, upset with the tackling. There was like one or two that could have been had, but other than that, it wasn't just blatant misses like we've seen in the past. So I'm still encouraged there, but yeah, pleasantly surprised, man, with it. They're going strong.
Well, what would you do against Hill and Waddle? Like, you have guys follow them? Who are those guys? I mean, how do you play them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would put Spoon on Hill, you know, and I would play it straight up. Like, I would see, hey, we're gonna test our guys, right, and see what we got. And I would put Woolen, you know, on Waddle. And so I think those are the matchups that I would, you know, really like to see, and how we challenge them and how they challenge us, and to see what we're really made of. So I wouldn't add any extra, you know, safety over the top, which could be, you know, maybe that's a dumb decision by me, but I don't have to make that call, luckily. But I'd like to see that and dedicate to the run, because if HN gets a slither or a glimpse of, you know, open space,
right,
I don't know. He's got the speed to go the distance. And so right now, just challenge the receivers and maybe put an extra defender in that box right away, because we're going against a quarterback that we don't know, and we're going to find out. Make him beat us. Don't make Achane, who's, man, he's got 46 touches over the first 2 weeks, like the most probably in the league. And so it's like, dude, maybe Ramondre Stevenson is the only guy that has more, the guy we saw last week. But this guy, if he sees the open field, he's gone.
Well, who gets the first pick?
The first interception?
Yeah, who's going to pick off Thompson first?
I'm going to go Julian Love. He's just always in the right position, always in the right spot. And like with Spoon, if we're playing man, like Spoon and Wolin, with the, if they're how I would call it, if they're really engaged in that matchup, they're not going to have a lot of opportunities to look back at the ball unless they're in zone.
Good point. I'm going to take Dotson to sneak one.
Well, you know, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I just said he's been hunting. He's been close a couple times.
Oh, yeah. If you had one hit him right in the hands against Denver. And then in preseason, he had one hitting him in the hands. So he's always in the right position. We might need to do some more ball drills, hit the jugs machine.
why do we struggle against backup quarterbacks historically? And do teams take backup quarterbacks lightly, maybe, even though they would tell you they don't, and you know, they'd say all the right things, but is there sort of a subconscious taking it lightly?
No, I don't think so. I think you kind of make them try to beat you. You're like, all right, put the ball in their hands. I'm like, let's see if he's got what it takes, you know, especially short week or preparation, short notice. So I think that's kind of the mentality. And every now and then someone rises to the occasion and does it, like Colt McCoy did twice.
Several times.
With two different teams.
With our hearts. Oh, good to see him. I mean, great career, but when he was out. All right.
But he's actually a great commentator. I listened to the other day, but were both of those games were in Seattle, weren't they?
Yes. Dude, when I saw Tua go down, I knew we were playing Miami. I was just worried they're going to bring him out of the booth. Yeah. Can you imagine? Yeah. Seahawks fans would freak out, man. He's the Grim Reaper of backup quarterbacks for us. Everybody listening on the podcast, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back to talk about the ESPN and the contender versus pretender thing. Just a second. Hey, Lofa, did you see this thing on ESPN where after 2 weeks they're naming contenders and pretenders? The Seahawks are 2-0. They, by the way, are also being disrespected in the power rankings. They're not even in the top 10.
Yeah.
But then ESPN goes further and calls them a pretender. Is that a deal or no deal?
Yeah, that's going to be a no for me, dog. I don't understand it. I don't understand the hate, right? So the power rankings, I think we're somewhere around 19. And there's like several, I think we're one of only 9 teams left that are 2-0. And
look at the Niners at 2. They're 1-1. Get out of here.
Yeah, I know. I'm just like, what? Who makes these things? Because I got a bone to pick with them. But blatant disrespect. And I just, you know, I think, though, McDonald and the boys would like to fly under the radar. And, you know, that's just added incentive and motivation to just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, totally. That's what I'm thinking. Keep writing them off, because you know what Gino would say to that.
Nothing, because he doesn't write back.
Yeah, I think ESPN does have the Seahawks at 10 in the power rankings. The Niners, let's see, oh, they're at 3. Yeah, excuse me. But dude, we should be higher than that. I think to their point, like, you know, who we beat, Bo Nix, we beat the Patriots, even though I think that win it will be better than I thought it would be by the end of the season. And then, of course, you know, whatever it happens here with a backup quarterback with the Dolphins. So, you know, I kind of get the point, but the disrespect is real and it's disrespectful.
Yeah. I mean, if we come out and win this game, they're going to say it was a backup quarterback and they'll drop us on the rankings. Right. You know, and it's the second week of the season. No one has any idea their true identity or who they are. Yeah. Who's on this? Is it McNeil on this stat? Where are the Saints and the Cowboys? Because I want to know where they're at.
Yeah, we'd have to look into that. Everybody's just falling all over themselves for the Saints and the Vikings.
Well, the Vikings, that defense looks crazy. Saints at 9. I mean, they killed both teams they played. Like,
and they beat the Cowboys on the road.
Yeah, in their house.
Yeah.
Wait, are the Cowboys are higher than us?
No, they're
four. Depends. It depends on which site you look at, though, because NFL.com had us at 19.
ESPN has the Cowboys at 14. So I don't know. Do you even put stock in these lists? Do players look at these lists?
No, we never look at these things, and I never did, at least, because it doesn't matter. Like, you don't know who's who until at least the second month of the season. And,
right.
And then you're kind of like, I mean, that really, by then, you know who's a quality opponent and who isn't.
Yeah. Hey, if you want to go look at the Seahawks in person and get a view of them yourselves, you guys can get seats with epicseats.com. Local Seattle company, doing it well for years and supporting us for years. So please go support them. Whether you're buying or selling seats, maybe you have some Seahawk tickets, but you, for some reason, can't go this weekend. Maybe one of your, you know, annoying friends scheduled a wedding. Or, you know, something like that. I mean, I can't imagine what I might be talking about. Maybe you need to offload some seats. EpicSeats.com. Also, Lofa, we have seats to give away. We have two tickets to this game with the Dolphins. If you want to win those seats, simply go follow us on Instagram. It's at All Day Family. We will pick from the followers at random and get in touch and try to see if you can go to the game this weekend. So all you got to do, go to Instagram, search All Day Family. That's All Day Family, all spelled out. Give it a follow, and we'll pick someone to go to the game. How easy is that?
Sounds pretty awesome. We'll be there. Maybe you'll see us.
All right. Oh, yeah. We should organize a group selfie.
I'm in.
Hey, let's put a pause on this thing, and then we'll be back with Sam Marcoux from the Perfectville podcast with the Dolphins to get the Dolphins' perspective on this game. Well, actually, I mean, we got a big matchup coming up this week, but I was going to start with the week one bizarre Tyreek Hill, you know, terrible situation, and sort of get your thoughts on that, what you thought when you saw that go down, and what's been going on with that since.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're into week three, but it's been 2 weeks of football, and the Miami Dolphins have made national headlines, not for sports, but for things outside of sports. And both times it's been quite disturbing. One, an injury, and of course, Tyreek Hill. I mean, that whole situation, when we first heard about it, didn't realize how disturbing it was at first. I mean, the original reports is that he was going like 120 miles per hour. That's not the case. He was going 15 miles per hour over the speed limit, which, quite frankly, we all do that. Could he have handled himself a little bit better in terms of his interactions with the cops? Yes. I mean, he's come out and said that, but I mean, it was just an absolute bizarre, disturbing, and really, really bad look for the police down there. Mm-hmm. I think for Tyreek, this is my opinion. I think for Tyreek and his teammates, it was a moment early in the season to galvanize themselves and say, we're part of the same team. I mean, I think about, what Greg Camarillo, my co-host, said, former Miami Dolphins wide receiver. Calais Campbell's a brand new guy to the Miami Dolphins. He pulls over, gets out, is supporting his teammate. I mean, I don't know what happens the rest of the year with Calais Campbell, the Miami Dolphins, but he's teammate of the year. And that's happening before the first game of the season, to sit down and be there for your guy. Jonnu Smith was there as well. You know, Tyreek calling out to him saying, please don't leave. I mean, that, to me, I think there's, you know, take everything that happened in that situation off the table and just think about the team. I think there's actually a lot of bonding that could have happened between Tyreek and those other teammates that stopped and helped him out. And the rest of the team sees that. And I think they're going to need that, especially given what happened in week two with Tua Tagovailoa. They're going to need to lean on the fact that they're in this together, that they are the Miami Dolphins. It's not Tyreek Hill and the rest of the team or anything like that. So there could be some positives from a team perspective that come out of this, but you know, in that bubble of what happened right there in that moment, I can't even put words to it. I can't justify it from my position on the West Coast as a white male versus a black male getting pulled over by the cops and everything that you see in those videos. So very disturbing, in my opinion.
Yeah. Sam Marcoux is our guest. He's joining us. He's from the Perfectville podcast on the Believe Sports Network. His co-host Greg Camarillo, as he mentioned, they're talking Dolphins all the time. Tua, that's the other big headline there. We could talk about, you know, your thoughts when the injury went down and sort of what has happened since, but then also what's going to happen at quarterback this weekend.
Oh, I'm expecting nothing less than 470 through the air by Skylar Thompson, maybe four, maybe five touchdowns.
Old prediction.
Yeah. Wow. That might be a, by the way. I was watching that game like everyone else, and the play happens, you know, in my opinion. Again, I'm not a medical expert. It didn't seem like a hit. I don't know if it happened when he collided with Damar Hamlin from the Buffalo Bills or when he actually landed and hit his head on the turf. Either way, it's almost irrelevant. The fact that he's hurt again and he's susceptible to these brain injuries is equally disturbing for different reasons than what we just talked about with Tyreek Hill and the police down in South Florida. Look, first and foremost, and I have to say it, you know, the thoughts go out to Tua and his family. He's got two kids. He's married. He's a family man. Whatever he decides to do, and that's fine by me. I mean, football is a big part of all of our lives. We're sitting here talking about it here, but it's not his entire life, and he's got an entire life to live, and he's gonna have to make the call that's right for him, whatever that is. That being said, you know, again, shout out to Greg Camarillo. This is not only a medical decision and a Tua Tagovailoa decision. This is going to be a Miami Dolphins decision too. I mean, they just gave him $53 million a year to go play quarterback, and he has proven all the way back through college that he can't stay healthy for one reason or another: the hip, the ankle, the concussions. He's only played one full season in the pros. So Miami Dolphins have to make a decision as well as to not only to protect Tua, but to protect themselves long term from a business standpoint. So it's going to be an interesting roller coaster going forward. Obviously, he's on IR for the next four games, eligible to come back against the Arizona Cardinals, which I would imagine that's when he's going to come back unless these concussion symptoms continue to linger. For the Miami Dolphins, somebody else other than Skylar Thompson's going to have to lead that huddle. It's probably going to be Tyreek Hill. He is the vocal leader. He's going to have to be the actual leader on offense now. Skylar Thompson, I hope this week they just gave him the playbook, and I hope he just opened it up, and it's pictures of Trent Dilfer in a Baltimore Ravens uniform. Like, this is all you need to do. Turn around, hand the ball off. Hopefully the defense can do what they got to do, but just be Trent Dilfer. That's what we're looking for the next four games. You're Trent Dilfer. And if he goes, but what about scat back Ernie Wright? No, Trent Dilfer.
To see former Seahawk legend also. All right.
There it is.
Lofa, what do you make of that?
But I mean, are you saying that the defense is up to, you know, that standard of Baltimore defense? Because
did you see them hold the Buffalo Bills to 31 points through three quarters, Lofa? I mean, that's a stout defense if I've ever seen one. Look, I will say this. I think the Buffalo Bills are an outlier. Anytime you look at stats, I don't care if it's sports or anything else, there's always like that one that's either really, really good or really, really bad. You got to throw that out. The Buffalo Bills, you almost have to throw out when it comes to the Miami Dolphins. They have owned us for far too long. It's very disgusting. As a kid who grew up in the 90s, I hate Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas and Andre Reed and James Lofton and Kent Hull, the center. Yes, I know who the center was on those 90s Buffalo Bills teams. I hate all of them, and I'm not afraid to say it. I just absolutely hate the Buffalo Bills. I detest them. So the fact that they beat us again is absolutely disgusting to me, but I'm going to throw that out. I'm going to look at the Jacksonville Jaguars game. Not a great offensive performance for the Miami Dolphins, but they held the Jaguars, who have a lot of weapons, to 17 points and shut them out in the second half of that game. So I do think there's some pride for the Miami Dolphins. You have Jalen Ramsey. You've got Jalen Phillips. All the Jalens are in the Miami Dolphins team right now. But Jalen Phillips came back a freak of nature. I mean, he tore his Achilles less than 300 days ago, and he's coming out getting sacks, game-winning sacks against the Jacksonville Jaguars in that game. Calais Campbell's a veteran. He's been there on the losing side and the winning side. They have some pieces on defense. Javon Holland, another guy from the Pacific Northwest out of Oregon. They have some pride. I don't think they like what happened to them against Buffalo and James Cook just taking our lunch money up and down the field. He's still running right now, actually. So, no, they're not the Baltimore Ravens, Lofa, not even close, but I do think they're going to come out fired up. They also know that their leader is down, and it's going to be up to them on some level to minimize the amount of pain that the Miami Dolphins are going to endure against offenses right now and try to keep it close if they're going to have a shot at winning this game with Skylar Thompson at quarterback.
If you guys can't tell, Sam Marcoux is also a comedian as well as hosting the Perfectville podcast. Well,
you got a guy we're familiar with up here, Jordan Brooks. How's Brooksy looking?
Oh, Brooks is looking fantastic. He's smaller than I remember watching him. He looks a little smaller, but I think linebackers in general are smaller right now because the way these offenses are. You've got to be out there. You got to be able to cover, a wide receiver three or four. So I think these linebackers, are getting a little bit smaller. I mean, he's not a small guy. Trust me. I remember the last time I was in Seattle, I went to a game. That was the game where I was actually doing comedy up there at the Seattle Underground. I don't think it's around anymore. It was, I think, week one, week two, something like that. And Ryan Tannehill throws a bomb, I believe, to Kenny Stills. And I turned around and I am talking trash to every 12th man that I possibly could. And then they all start cheering. I'm like, that's really odd because we just scored a touchdown. And then I turn around and realize he dropped the ball. And then we lost by like 6 points. And I was like, well, wonderful. But I remember being on the field next to like Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas before the game. And these are safeties. These are defensive backs. And I'm like, okay, they're smaller guys. I was sadly mistaken. I mean, these guys were massive human beings. So when I say Jordan Brooks is smaller, that's compared to other ginormous, gigantic men playing football. Not
what number is he wearing down there?
He's 20, I believe.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say some of these linebackers now are wearing the single digits, which I think makes them sort of look smaller than they are.
Yeah.
You know, you see a big 55 or 54 coming at 51 coming at you.
That's a good point. You got like Rashid Shaheed in New Orleans wearing 22, catching 80-yard bombs. You're like, why is Reggie Bush out there? And, you know, what is happening?
If Tua has to be out for longer or something, you know, and obviously not rooting for that, but just if something like that happens, who should they go get?
Well, I mean, I was on Mad Dog Sports Radio last week right after it happened, and I think a good story, I don't know if he's a good fit. I mean, Ryan Tannehill is out there. He spent many years for the Miami Dolphins. He can't wear 17. Sorry, Jalen Waddle's got that. But he's a guy that can come in, and at least Miami Dolphins fans from that perspective would be like, oh, cool, the guy's coming home, you know, and then we get the sports reporters telling us and reminding us that he used to play wide receiver in college because they say that every time he's playing. Pie in the sky, it will not happen, but there's a part of me, a small part of me that wants to see Tom Brady pick up the phone when Stephen Ross calls him and says, you got one more year in you?
Well, it's not
working out so well. You don't want to say that to Brett.
He's a better football player than he is broadcaster.
I'm a Miami Dolphins fan. You think I want Tom Brady in a uniform? Yes. The answer is yes, I do. He's got six Super Bowl rings. But I just think the story would be fantastic. I mean, talk about changing the narrative on the season early. If you can get Tom Brady out there at 58 years old or whatever age he is right now, you know, his face is only 3 years old, which he's probably in his physical prime. But Brady and Ryan Tannehill are the two that I think of. There was reports that Cam Newton was in camp yesterday. Just blast the most elite tweet yesterday and said, no, he can't join the team. We already have two men as it is between the players that are already here, which I thought was fantastic. They did sign Snoop Huntley, who former Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
Pro Bowl quarterback, Snoop Huntley. Which it would be interesting. And that's probably what it's going to be. If he's out longer, then maybe they'll look at a veteran or try to make a trade. But if he's out longer, the season's lost and you're probably playing for next year anyway. So if they use Snoop, it's probably going to be, I'm guessing, in some sort of RPO package where he can come in and give different dynamic.
No, that's what I don't want to see. No, that's starting to scare me. We hate playing backup quarterbacks, especially ones that can run. No. That scares me. See, because I got Skyler's stats right here. Okay.
Oh, yeah. He's prepared to be amazed, ladies and gentlemen.
Seven games played in 2022 with the Dolphins. That's Skyler Thompson. And then one game played in 2024. I guess that's this when he came in here.
Right.
One touchdown, three interceptions, career. He's thrown for 614 yards. I mean, you know, not too much experience there. Let's go.
Well, in Skyler's defense, I actually have a pretty good Skyler Thompson draft story as well. But Skyler came in after Tua had a concussion against the Green Bay Packers in 2022 and finished off the season. He was actually our starting quarterback against Buffalo in the wild card round. And actually, the Miami Dolphins had the lead mainly because of their defense going into the fourth quarter of that game. So, yes, he doesn't have a lot of experience, but the experience he does have is fairly tangible. I mean, big moments. He didn't lose us that game. We were just beat by the Buffalo Bills yet again. I mean, they were a better team that year and clearly this year. So, no, I don't think Skyler Thompson is going to, you know, pull off the impossible and take us to the Super Bowl. Something else is going to have to happen if the Miami Dolphins are going to have a shot at that this year. But he does have regular season and playoff starting experience, and that's got to count for something. I don't know what, but something.
That you guys should have won that game. You didn't keep running Miles Gaskin and the other UW Husky. Who's the other guy?
We had Miles, and then we had, oh my gosh, he's still like on our practice squad. The guy must have pictures of Tom Garfinkel and Mike McDaniel.
Salvin Ahmed.
Suvan Ahmed. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, they were averaging like five or six a clip, and then he just tried to air it out. And so that's what I'm curious is with Skyler coming in, what do they do, right? And because you got A-Chain back there, Mostert, Wilson coming back. Like,
what do they do? What do I do? A-Chain's my fantasy running back, and he's going against the Seahawks here. What do I do? And what do they do with A-Chain, and how's he looking?
You start him. First of all, I'm looking at the camera feed here. I'm way too close to the camera. My head is twice the size of Lofa Tatupu's, and I am not the same size as this man. So I probably need to back up a little bit, but that's just a personal problem if you're watching the feed right now. The one thing that the Miami Dolphins can do and maybe escape Seattle, and that's what it would be, escape Seattle with a victory, it's going to have to be a low-scoring game, is run the damn ball. I mean, Devon Achane, if he's your fantasy football, he's got, what, 7 targets in both games in terms of pass catching out of the backfield. Yep. He's actually running quite well in between the tackles. He's been the most consistent offensive player this season, regardless of wide receiver or any other position group there. You start Devon Achane because he is the guy. Frank Smith, our offensive coordinator, came out today and said, this guy gets every piece of the playbook. Even the pages that is just Trent Dilfer, those pages aren't for him. But, you know, I think his playbook is probably like LaDainian Tomlinson, like just be this guy. He gets the ball out of the backfield. He runs fast. He can break tackles. He'll make you look stupid if you try to just square up and hit him in the open field. So you start him. That's the guy they're going to have to lean on, especially with the way this too high safety look is going. And I mean, that's just shutting down this traditional Miami Dolphins offense. Mel Kiper came out today and was like, get off my lawn and get rid of two high safeties. Devon Achane's going to have to be, you know, the straw that stirs the drink for the Miami Dolphins. Eventually, you know, Seattle's going to have to come down and account for him. And then hopefully at that point, take a shot with Jalen Waddle.
Well, we gave up some rushing yards, though, last week, Lofa. I mean, you know, as a fantasy owner, I'm excited. But as a Seahawk fan, I'm nervous.
He's got speed. I don't know if you can catch him if he breaks in the open field. Like, Ramondre broke into the open field, and so did Antonio Gibson on us. And we were able to walk them down, thank God. But I don't know about with Achane. Like, so, well, it's going to be tested. I'll tell you that much. Our rush defense this week.
What scares you about the Seahawks offense?
Well, look, I mean, there's a guy named DK Metcalf that Geno Smith. With all due respect to Geno Smith. I'm don't about to disrespect the man. Whenever anyone says all due respect, you disrespect
him. Here, we're finally going to hear why he's underrated from somebody. What's up?
I'll tell you what, the man can take a punch. I know that. But I'm going to say that it's a throwback to the Jets. Shout out to the Jets. Keep being the Jets, New York. All right. I'm going to say that. I'm a positive guy. I'm an optimist, as you guys have seen here in the last 15 minutes that we've spent together. Pete Carroll was robbed of Coach of the Year 2 years ago because he made the playoffs with Geno Smith as the starting quarterback, and they should rename the award the Pete Carroll Coach of the Year Award for that alone. Sorry, guys. Geno Smith does not scare me. Having said that, he's probably going to come out and run for 75 yards and a tug and throw for 250 and DK Metcalf.
Why doesn't he scare you? All he does is win games. He comes from behind. I think he leads the league over the course of the last few years and in game-winning drives and all that. He's got ice water in his veins. He hasn't written back yet. I mean, he hasn't won the big one, right? Like, there hasn't been that sort of signature game or playoff moment or things like that. But when it comes to putting up numbers and balling out, he has been so far, and he has been this year so far.
Yeah, look, he's no Skylar Thompson, but he somehow done. And I can respect that. I can absolutely respect the fact that Geno Smith is terrorizing the NFC West. Like I said, I live in the Niner country, and I love when he comes out and frustrates the heck out of Fred Warner and everybody else. I just don't get it. I don't understand how he wins games. You ever have somebody in your life where you're like, you know, they do 4 things wrong, but somehow they live in a bigger house than you and they have more money in your bank account than you. And you're just like, I don't get, you're doing something illegal and I don't know what it is. Geno Smith is doing something illegal and I don't know what it is.
Yeah, he's murdering defenses.
All right, I'm going to put an end to this disrespect and just school you on what's happened the last several years. You say that Pete Carroll should be Coach of the Year. I thought he did a phenomenal job as coach that year. I would even go so far as to say that Geno Smith saved his job.
Fair enough.
So, Geno had, I don't think he's even had a 1,000-yard rusher yet. Maybe Ken Walker did that year, but we've never had a healthy O-line. And so we've been really one dimensional, only using pass. And when they know we're going to throw the ball, they can leave seven in the box and defend the run. So I think the last 2 years, and then always, we haven't had a high ranking defense like we did when Russ was here. Russ right. had the number one defense his first 4 years. It's pretty easy to win games when you have Marshawn Lynch on one side and then the number one defense Legion of Boom on the other side. So there's my rebuttal. I'm just telling you, trying to educate everybody.
Keep poking the bear, everybody. I love it. Do it all season long. Do it all the way through the playoffs. Keep going.
Lofa, you see the size of my head. I know what I'm talking about.
I know. I think you're thinking a lot now. I think I got those wheels turning, and you're like, wait,
we got to get the comments going off. Why is Geno so disrespected? Why is he underrated? And how do you guys feel about him out there? Start loading the comments down there.
I don't hate the guy. I wish he was still on the Jets.
Injury reports. My goodness, the Seahawks injury report reads like my kid's Amazon wish list, Lofa. It's so long. it's ridiculous. You got Kenneth Walker with the oblique. Lakin Tomlinson, the guard, which it's NIR rest. What is that? I don't know what that is. It's listed on there.
Like veteran rest?
Veteran rest maybe? Right. Okay, so did not practice. Brady Russell, our guy, WrestleMania, shows up on there. With a shoulder, did not practice. Jerome Baker, outside linebacker, hamstring. Chenna on there still, knee. Boye Mafe, knee. Kayvon Wallace, a friend of the show, with a shoulder. Leonard Williams with a knee. DK with a hand. Those are all did not practices. And then limited in practice. We're still going, guys. Pharaoh Brown, Noah Fant, George Fant, the Fant brothers, both limited in practice. Tyler Lockett. Derek Hall, Spoon, Chenault, and Dodson and Reed. Chenault, Dodson, and Reed are FP. So is that full participation?
Full practice.
They got upgraded, But Spoon and Hall and Lockett, Fant, all those guys are limited in practice. And then on the Dolphins side, I mean, you guys are relatively healthy coming into this one.
That's because everyone's on IR, so you can't really list them.
they're not on the list.
I got to say, like, this is one of those things where this is, like, the first time I've been covering the Miami Dolphins in terms of podcasts and as a broadcaster for about 8 years. This is, I think, the first time that I've ever seen the injury report flip to where the other team has more people listed than the Miami Dolphins. I had to, like, rub my eyes like a cartoon character and go, is that correct?
Right.
You guys, I don't know what happened the first couple of weeks, but I'm imagining most of those, at least the limited practices and the veteran rest, they're going to play. I mean, Tyler Lockett's going to play. Jerome Baker's going to play. Jerome Baker is going to bring his mom to the game, and he's going to ball out. It's a Jerome Baker revenge game. That's what's going to happen. I just figured it out right now. We're going to have the lead. And Skylar Thompson's going to get sacked, fumble. Jerome Baker's going to pick it up, and Jerome Baker, the touchdown maker, is going to reemerge. Damn it. I just realized what's going
to
happen.
Oh, I love that. I got Dodson with a pick. Lofa's got Love with a pick. This sounds like a good game to me.
I don't like your guys' attitude right now.
That's a good point, though. So, you know, we essentially swapped middle linebackers, right? Yeah. And what did you see in – because I love Jerome Baker's game, and I couldn't believe that they moved on from him. So what did you, you know, think of that move?
It's one of those mutual parting of the ways. I think he needed a change of pace. I mean, the guy, depending on who the defensive coordinator was really, really good for us. Or if it was a bad fit, then he was kind of exposed a little bit. But the guy's got so much speed. He can cover tight ends. He can cover running backs coming out of the backfield. He's a really just, in my opinion, a very good all-around player. I don't know that he excels at anything. He's never going to be like, he's the best at, you know, blitz coverage or any of that. It's just, the guy's really, really good. He's going to have a long career, and nobody in Miami hates him. He's not one of those guys who are like, good riddance, get out of here. He's kind of like, hey, we root for him, except for this week. But no, he's a good guy. You know, famously, one of those games he was mic'd up and he'd made a play and he was looking for his mom in the stands. That's why I brought that up. The whole thing was like, where's my mom? Where's my mom at? And I was like, I don't even know. She missed all the plays that he made in that game. She wasn't in the stands. But no, we love Jerome Baker. It was sad to see him go. We had to make some decisions. Christian Wilkins was another one, just a monster for the defensive line. He ends up going to the Raiders. We just couldn't afford him with everyone else that we paid, including Tua, Tyreek, Jalen, and, you know, the coach and everyone else. Yeah. So it was just a numbers crunching thing. But yeah, no, Jerome Baker was solid.
How's the pass rush, though? How are they going to get after
They looked really good in preseason and in training camp, but they were going against our O-line, so maybe that's not the right litmus test to go up against. they didn't do well against Buffalo. What I will say is I think if you look at individual performances, Chop Robinson, first round draft pick for the Miami Dolphins, no sacks yet. So if you look at his stat line, you go, this guy's not doing much. But he was putting Deion Dawkins on roller skates and pushing him back. It was just they couldn't get to Josh Allen, and he was able to throw the ball or make a play. Jalen Phillips looks good. Calais Campbell's done really well up front. Zach Sealer, number 92. We call him Random White, like Reggie White, but Random White, 92. He's been a good player for us for a really long time. So the defensive front is actually pretty good. It's kind of behind. I mean, our secondary hasn't been great so far. You know, we brought Jordan Poyer in to kind of be that other safety, and I'm convinced he's just a spy for the Buffalo Bills at this point. No, I they're playing chess. We're playing checkers. They're like, yeah, why don't you go get money from them and then have to let Jerome Baker go. And then you just let everyone catch everything. How about that? What's that? And he's like, that's a good plan. I like it. But no, so the defensive line is pretty good. Jordan Poyer is going to hit me in the face next time I see him.
I'm pretty sure.
But it depends on the level of competition. They did really, really well against Jacksonville. But they didn't do as well against Buffalo. So depending on how you guys are performing right now, it might be a problem for Seattle. But, you know, I would say middle of the road, maybe upper part of middle of the road, if that makes any sense. Number 12 in the league, if I had to rank them.
We got to get to our score prediction. It's brought to you by our friends at Simply Seattle, Seattle's best apparel company. This is a Simply Seattle item. Check it out. Not just team stuff. They got Pacific Northwest gear, sweet Seattle hoodie. Lofa, of course, rocking the Sonics gear. They're the world's largest Sonics retailer. Go to simplyseattle.com. Let them know that we sent you. I think we're working on a promo code or something, so we'll get that out there. But
they,
also,
they're going to be selling more Sonics gear than Clippers gear, right? Like, the Clippers are an actual team, but there's got to be more Sonics gear out there than the Clippers, right?
Absolutely. More Sonics gear in Seattle than ever before, right now.
Across the country.
You guys want to hear Gary?
Every game that I tune into.
You want to hear a good Gary Payton story?
Hell yeah.
Okay. So I know we got to get to the predictions, and I appreciate all the time. And I know I'm bullying the mic here, and my head is just taking over the whole screen. I apologize. I gotta get on a diet. But I was doing comedy in Northern California. Gary Payton's from Oakland, California. And I was talking trash about the 49ers, like I always do. And I get off stage, and this dude in the middle row slaps me on my thigh and says, good shit, boy. Sorry for the language. And I go, thanks, guy who looks like Gary Payton. And then I realized it was Gary Payton. So after the show, he comes up to me. He's a big 49ers fan. Sorry, Seattle. And he says, I didn't appreciate those Niner jokes. Well, I'm a Lakers fan. And I said, well, Gary Payton, I didn't appreciate you teaming up with Karl Malone, Shaquille O'Neal, and Kobe Bryant and somehow losing to the Pistons. What are you talking about? And he goes, well, I guess we're even. I'm like, no, we're not even. You know how much money I lost? Chauncey Billups? Really? Chauncey Billups ate your lunch? And we're even? We're not even.
So, Chauncey Billups a beast.
Yeah. Shout out to Chauncey Billups and Tayshaun Prince and the rest of the B squad who took the championship that year. So I was open. It was all weekend. I was opening for Bruce. Shout out to Bruce. Great comedian. So the next night, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to talk Niners because you never know who's in the stand or who's in the crowd. And Marshawn Lynch comes to a lot of these shows. I'm going to talk about the Raiders. So I had this whole bit about the Raiders, about how Sebastian Janikowski once threw a drink at me, but I put my hands up like this and it went, you know, 40 yards to the right, missed me, missed the stage, missed everyone completely. So I'm just trashing the Raiders, just absolutely trashing them. And I get off the stage and the entire staff of Tommy T's Comedy Club is laughing. And I go, what? And they go, you got to go upstairs. So I go upstairs and it's Michael Crabtree. And I called him out on stage. No. Didn't know he was there.
Oh, shit.
It was Derek Carr. It was basically the entire Oakland Raiders at that point, right? So for the most part, athletes and Lofa, hopefully I feel like you are, if you're trashing them and then you talk to them afterwards, they get it. They're at a comedy show. It's kind of what it is. People understand. I go to shake everyone's hand. I've known Derek Carr for a while, so he sees me. He's like, good to see you. I shake everyone's hand except for Michael Crabtree. And he takes a napkin and he threw it at me and I caught it and I go, that's called a reception.
Oh,
and then
no.
He walked off and left the comedy club before Bruce ever hit the stage.
That is ice cold. Talking trash to the glove though. That's a legendary
story.
He's
a good dude. I actually just saw him the other day. He came to another one of my shows. Great guy.
Simply Seattle also furnishes our contest here, which is the score prediction challenge. We will give you our predictions. You guys find the post on Instagram. Leave your predictions under there in the comments. Usually no one nails it. However, Lofa, the fans and the listeners are 2-0. They've nailed it. Somebody's gotten it both weeks. So here's your third chance at it, everybody. Sam, what's the score going to be at the end of the game?
Well, let's see. I'm up in the Pacific Northwest right now. I'm visiting with you guys and knowing your audience. I don't know that Skylar Thompson's going to shock the world. I think that the scores are going to be less than what people want. I mean, nobody roots for a boring game. Everyone bets the over. No one wants the under. I think you take the under in this one, guys. I think this is probably going to be something like on the high end, 24 for Seattle, 13 for the Miami Dolphins. This is not going to be a high scoring affair. It's probably going to have some sort of defensive turnover that leads to points, if not a pick six or a fumble recovery for a touchdown or something like that. But yeah, I think the Seahawks are going to take it.
Well, as long as that's two touchdowns for A-Chain with a missed extra point, I'll take it.
He might be the one having to kick the extra points at this point. I mean, we don't even know. He might be the only guy. Might be the only one showing up.
Oh, Lo, man. All right. I think the 12s give, you know, Skylar hell, like, and that's a tough crowd to play in front of. And so I think, you know, some miscommunication errors over there. I'm going to go 34.
Ooh,
I think Gino and the boys are going to take the next step. And just now we're going to get the touchdowns with all those 330 plus yards, right? And less drops this time. All right.
Okay.
So yeah, 34 Hawks, and I'll give them 20. I know Tyreek's going to find the end zone somehow, and A-Chain probably too. So, yeah.
Well, hopefully A-Chain throws it to him, and I could get points for that too.
I'd love points.
I always go with a wacky score because it's, take my word for it. I'm a chucklehead with a microphone. But anyway, I got the Seahawks just like Lofa, actually, 31, though. Just so slightly lower, but still high scoring. You said 34. I go 31. And then Miami will get 12.
12? Did we get six safeties at least? Like, six is that safeties. Your defense coming?
I was thinking that too. Six safeties.
Check out that math, by the way.
Hey, we gave up two the first. That was great math. We gave up two the first game. Two safeties.
I would rather you do 10 than 12. Like, 12 is disrespectful for some reason. Why is that? I don't know why I'm upset by that.
Sam, you're the absolute man. Thanks for being here. Sam's a comedian and a host of the Perfectville podcast, co-hosted with Greg Camarillo, former Dolphin. Before you get out of here, I know we've gone overtime.
Shout out to Chris Cullen. Chris Cullen as well as our other co-host. Oh, okay. He's going to listen to this, and he's a former collegiate football player, and he's a middle linebacker, and he will smash my face if we don't talk about Chris Cullen. By the way, Chris Cullen, Zach Cullen, his son, Zachary Thomas Cullen, named after the great 54, is a junior in high school and is getting recruited like heavy on the East Coast. Look out for that name in a couple of years. Zachary Thomas Cullen, running back.
I'll do what any good host does and blame my producer. What's your Dan Marino story?
Sorry, Katie. All right. So a couple of years ago, I was in Las Vegas doing comedy, and wouldn't you know it, they actually, like, there's like alcohol and stuff in Las Vegas. So I ended up at the Hooters Hotel for the food, of course. And inside the Hooters Hotel is a restaurant. It's not even there anymore, but the restaurant was owned by Dan Marino. And I'm with a couple of buddies, and we've been drinking, and we realized that the food is garbage. Like, it's just bad. It's like Dan Marino circa 1999 in the playoffs. It's not good. So we leave there. And we get into the elevator, and we're just talking smack about our hero. We're all Dolphins fans, and we're talking about how the food is bad, and I can't believe Dan Marino would lend his name to this. I'm never watching Ace Ventura again, all this stuff. And we look over, and wouldn't you know it, Dan Marino's in the elevator with us, and we're like, oh, and he's like, late night boys? We're like, no, we just, your food is lousy, though, man. Like, you got to do something about this. And then he just, like, hit the button, and I think we were in between floors. He could not get out. It was the first time I've ever seen him actually be mobile and escape a pocket. Like, he just opened the elevator doors and left at, you know, floor 2.5. Like, he's like, I'm not going to be in here.
Right, it open and crawled out of there.
Get out. I'm out of here.
Every single time you talk shit, the person is standing right there.
Oh, man.
I have bad vision. I've got astigmatism. I'm not even wearing my glasses.
Dude, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for being here. Yeah. We'll check you out on the Perfectville podcast. Thanks, man.
All day. Thank you guys very much.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back with our guest, Kobe Bryant, right after this.